Todos saben, tenemos los trabajadores campesinos tienen un representante trabajando en Europa. Y la razón por eso es porque los rancheros siguen vendiendo la uva en la extranjera. Calculamos que en este año como 20% de la uva que producen en esta región va a ser exportado a países extranjeros, principalmente a Europa del Norte, es decir, los países de Escandinavia e Inglaterra. Los resultados de nuestros trabajos allí han sido los siguientes, que en primer lugar la Federación Internacional de Transportes ha pasado una resolución que de apoyo al boicot de nosotros y han mandado una directiva, un orden a todos los sindicatos afiliados de transportes que imponen un bloqueo, es decir, que no descargan la uva de California cuando llega a las puertas allí, que ponen un bloque de la uva de California. Hasta ahora los países, digo, mejor dicho, los sindicatos de transportes en Inglaterra, Suecia y Finlandia han tomado la acción de poner un bloqueo, una blockade. ¿Cómo dice eso? No sé. Bloqueo, gracias. Y ahora mismo yo creo que hoy en día o mañana va llegando a las puertas de Suecia el primero de tres barcos que vienen cargando más de 300,000 libras de uva de California. Esta uva no va a ser descargado. Ellos van a tener, los personas que importan la uva, van a tener que encontrar otros países a donde mandar esa uva. Y el resultado de eso es que las compañías que importan la uva allí ya han dicho que con esa presión ellos van a terminar la compra de uva de California porque por ellos no vale la pena comprarla. Ellos pueden comprar uva de España o de Argentina o de África del Sur y como dije, que parece que la uva y la política reaccionaria va mano en mano, ¿no? The second thing I wanted to say was that as we collected statistics on the international, on the export of grapes, most of which are grown in California, we found some very interesting things about grape shipments to Vietnam. In 1965 and 1966, when the boycott was mainly against the wine grape growers, Vietnam, this is South Vietnam, was in 25th place in the world, in 25th place as an importer of United States table grapes. Last year, when the boycott started against Yamara, in those years when it was in 25th place, it imported about $40,000 worth of grapes. This is South Vietnam as a private importer. Last year, when the boycott started against Yamara, it jumped to $213,000 worth of grapes. Now, that year, troops that went to Vietnam kind of stabilized. This year, after that troop stabilization has taken place, we only have statistics from January to June, but it looks like there will be over $500,000 worth of grapes being imported into Vietnam, South Vietnam, and which will make it about the third largest importer in the world. Now the question, and the very serious question that we have about the statistics, these are U.S. Department of Commerce statistics, is that these same statistics also include statistics for foreign aid, for foreign military aid under the Military Defense Act, and also for surplus food shipments. Now, we have not seen breakdowns on these statistics, and we would like to know, and we have had people, and we encourage people to write to the Department of Defense asking for this breakdown. In other words, are these scab grapes that are being dumped in the market being bought up by taxpayers' programs to be sent in foreign aid? Are they being carried in U.S. ships? And are they being bought in turn? Are they imported by South Vietnamese middlemen and then sold in turn to U.S. commissaries over there? Now that's one side of the story. That's what South Vietnam imports itself. The second thing is what the U.S. government has been buying. In the past 3 years, the U.S. government finally issued a fact sheet. This is Department of Defense use of table grapes, finally issued a fact sheet on their buying grapes. What seems to be happening is in the past 3 years, they've bought 23 million pounds of table grapes. They give us a breakdown of these grapes to Vietnam. In 1967, it was about 450,000 pounds. In 1968, this is the fiscal year, it was 500,000 pounds. Now, for the first quarter, this is only from June, from July through September of the fiscal year of 69, there are 630,000 pounds of table grapes that went to Vietnam alone. Now, to just give you an idea of some of the double talk that comes out of the Defense Department when we're trying to ask what their policy is on California grapes and on buying these grapes that are being dumped on the market to break our strike, they say, the resolution of a labor dispute involves complex and delicate areas of judgment and interpretation for which the responsibility has been vested by the Congress in other agencies of the government. From the diverse opinions that have appeared in the various news media, it is quite apparent that the dispute over California table grapes falls in this category. Now let's look at two things very carefully. The Defense Department is saying they're either stupid or they're lying. They're saying the same thing that Nixon said during the campaign, that farm workers are covered by laws which allow labor disputes to be resolved by other agencies of government, mainly the National Labor Relations Act. Now, this is simply not true. This is why we're on strike, and this is why we have to have a boycott. Now, in Nixon's case, we know that it was, since he's a lawyer, it's probably less ignorance than getting contributions from agribusiness. But in the Defense Department's case, we don't know. The second thing that we find very curious is that the Defense Department is basing its interpretation of what the law is, the law of the land, the labor law, on diverse opinions that have appeared in various news media. So these are, it seems evident to us very simply that the United States government is buying up in greater quantities the grapes that are being dumped on the market. On one hand, they declare a war on poverty. On the other hand, they've declared a war on the United Farm Workers by buying up these quantities of grapes. Voy a traducir en español ahora. Es que en el tiempo en que estamos buscando la estadística sobre la exportación de la uva, hemos encontrado unas datos muy curiosos, que causan mucha sorpresa sobre la exportación de la uva a Vietnam. Es decir, en las últimas tres años, Vietnam del Sur ha sido antes, en el 66-65, el país en el 25, no puedo decirlo, 25, ¿cómo digo 25th, me entiende, ¿no? 25 lugar de, como un país que importa la uva de los Estados Unidos. Ahora que ya tenemos el boycott, ellos han subido al tercero posición en todo el mundo por importa la uva. Lo que disturba mucho a nosotros es que la misma estadística que describe la uva que va a Vietnam del Sur también incluye estadísticas sobre la comida que está mandado por los Estados Unidos, por el gobierno de los Estados Unidos, bajo de los programas de ayuda al extranjero. Y nosotros queremos saber si el gobierno de los Estados Unidos está usando ese programa, esos programas que están pagados por nuestros mismos impuestos para quebrar nuestra huelga. En segundo lugar, hemos encontrado que el ejército de los Estados Unidos también está aumentando siempre su compra de la uva. Es decir, aumentando esa compra de uva a un grado que sobra en cualquier manera la nivel de tropas, la necesidad del ejército. Y ellos nos mandan finalmente por, han publicado un fact sheet, un resumen sobre esta compra de uva. Es decir, por ejemplo, en el año de 67 han comprado más que 400 miles de libras de uva para mandar a Vietnam. En el año 68 han comprado 500 mil libras de uva para mandar a Vietnam. Ahora que tenemos el boycott de toda la uva de California, en solamente las tres meses anteriores han comprado 600 miles de libras de uvas para mandar a Vietnam Y parece a nosotros que están usando ese táctico para quebrar la huelga aquí. Ellos dicen en este resumen que han publicado que hacen los mismos errores que hizo Nixon durante la campaña. Como ustedes recuerdan, él andaba por toda California, ¿no?, haciendo abrazos a todos los patrones. Dicen que los trabajadores sí tienen remedios legales, digo, tienen remedio bajo la ley nacional de trabajadores para organizarse, para pedir elecciones. Es simplemente una mentira, no lo tienen. Y así dicen también el Departamento de Defensa de los Estados Unidos. Y nosotros queremos saber si el mismo gobierno de los Estados Unidos, que declara una guerra contra la pobreza a un mano, está tratando de quebrar nuestro movimiento al otro mano por comprar tanta uva de que producen aquí en California. Muchas gracias.
The next part of the agenda is presentation of the treasurer, Tony Orendain. I have been looking around for him, but I can't see him.
Oh.
Tony Orendain is the treasurer of the United Farm Workers Organizing Committee. Tony.
Thank you, Phillips. Well, you hear now about the boycott and all the ways and means they can help in us. And I'm here trying to tell you about money. We need money too. It's kind of funny, but see, before we send people in the boycott across the nation, we depend 100% and the people is helping us. Meanwhile, our boycott people arrive at new places. And the road and the estate and the houses, and the volunteers, they offer their homes and they give us some money. But sometimes in the road, the car is broken down and they need money for repairs, emergency repairs or something, when we don't have any friends or something. That's when they need the money come real essential. Our donations come here to Delano during the Christmas season and New Year's was real nice and pretty good. But now New Year's is over and Christmas is over and the donations is going down. And especially maybe from many people right here from Los Angeles and San Francisco and Sacramento, they see one of the state senators. He went and our 40 acres and take a picture of a bunch where we have all our clothes, the used clothes and a few groceries, pile them up and say, we don't need any of those things. And I think in the news and the paper said, like, are we making business selling those things? Well, let me tell you, maybe I make business because I was in charge to sell those things myself, to sell the used clothes. The purpose to sell those clothes is because a lot of people bring here that used clothes. And up there in the service station, we don't have the place to displace it and to catalyze, to have the different size for the strikers. So we rent in another place where you have 8 rooms, and we put up all hangers and all the clothes is hanged down right there. So the strikers can go and find what they need. But like underwear, socks, and shoes, we don't have many of those things. So we need to give some money from the treasurer to buy some personal needs. So what I'm doing at the present time, or what we're doing is, our own union members, they working under contract, like in Fresno or in Parlier, they come and buy what they need right there in this in the small store for 10 and 15 cents, and that money is going in the kitty for send money, like Bustos, Julio Hernandez with 7 kids in Cleveland, Bustos with 4 kids up there in Kansas, or when was Tony Mendez up there in Vancouver, and those places where it's real cold, and we're not able to sell to send the used clothes to Vancouver, or to send used clothes to Cleveland, or to Ohio, or those places, so I send money for personal needs. I send money for repair the cars up there. And this is a business I'm doing up there in the 40 acres. or whatever we can sell here to the people. See, we give a first service to the strikers and the picket line, they go and looking around what they needed. The people like myself, we are here every day. We get what we need without any charge or nothing. And sometimes when I don't find any shoes or socks or underwear, I need to request for personal needs expense. And the same with the picket line. And the other people, they come from, they working in the country, like I said before, we sell all that used clothes, and this is the way I can, we can get that money for the expenses of the people in the boycott. So especially now, a lot of people in the boycott, they have an expenses in leaflets, they have expenses, gas, meals, place to stay. So they, believe me, it's, I need to be in touch with those people, sincerely, whether it is possible, or explain it to them to fundraising. It is important not only to fundraise for his own expenses, but wherever is possible to send here in Delano. So this is exactly the way we expend our money here in Delano, and I hope many of you understand. And if you have questions about it, I'm glad to answer later on up there in the office, and if you have doubts about the income, I'm glad to answer all those things, and I hope you can help in us keep up the good work. Keep fundraising, passing the voice about the not to buy grapes, and it's the only way we can make a little bit hair away, because you see, it's the first time, I believe it's the first time, Cesar Chavez put the problem of the farm worker like a social problem, like anybody can help. Not only the labor movement, but not only unions, but the students, everybody, even ourselves, the farm workers, we're trying to do something for ourselves. So I think it's something great for us, and I hope we can, someday we can get Guimara and keep not only California, but some other states. Sometime maybe we're going back to Texas and organize too. Thank you. Ya se me olvidó el español. Estaba diciendo del modo en que estamos usando el dinero que nos que hacen fundraising aquí en los Estados Unidos para el movimiento de la huelga. El lunes, senador del estado vino aquí a los 40 acres y se retrató ahí donde estábamos con el montón de ropa y comida, y luego salió en el periódico que no necesitábamos comida, que no necesitábamos ropa, porque teníamos mucha de sobra. Lo que pasaba en esos días es que como eran Christmas y Año Nuevo, se fue amontonando porque vinieron muchas donaciones y no nos daban tiempo a sortearla, a buscar los tamaños para poderse dársela a la gente. Así es que tuvimos que rentar otra casa donde tiene 8 cuartitos y pusimos ahí para colgar la ropa y los tamaños y todo. Así es que todas las personas que andan en el picket line van primero y guardamos la mejor ropa para los del picket line para que vayan y se la midan. Nos mandan muchos pantalones, camisas y sacos, hasta corbatas, pero corbatas pues no tapan mucho el frío. Así, también a veces también me he puesto yo, por ejemplo, los sacos o los suits, los trajes completos, y luego me dicen, pues tú no pareces farm worker. Pero así es que por esas cosas, así es que ahora estamos, lo que estamos haciendo es vendiendo, dándole esa ropa, como les dije, a los del picket line son los que agarran primera oportunidad de escoger. Y luego la otra que va quedándose la vamos vendiendo a las personas que están trabajando con Shenley o allá en Christian Brothers, o que vengan aquí, vienen y compran la ropa por 10, 15 centavos, un saco, un pantalón, lo que vayan necesitando. Eso, ese dinero entra también aquí a la tesorería para poderle mandar dinero como a Julio Hernández, que tiene 7 muchachos allá en Cleveland, y ellos no habían visto tanta nieve antes, pero lo malo es que ahora que miran mucha nieve también dicen que se le andan quebrando los dientes de tanto titiritar de frío. Así es que tengo, no le puedo mandar la ropa usada, así es que tengo que mandarles dinero para que compren ropa ya. Lo mismo pasó como Tony Méndez cuando estaba ahí en Vancouver, también estaba muy contento, pero la misma cosa, de que la nieve, sus niños de él no habían mirado tanta nieve. Así es que pues esa es la razón de que estamos invirtiendo o agarrando, tratando de sacar un poco de dinero de esa ropa que nos llega para mandarle a las personas que están en el boycott. Estaba diciendo también que gracias a César Chávez, que fue el primero que puso el problema del trabajador del campo, no como un problema que nada más le interesa a la iglesia o que le interesa nada más a las uniones o que es problema de las uniones. ha puesto el problema como que es un problema social, donde tanto la iglesia, tanto las uniones, tanto los estudiantes, todo mundo, cualquiera puede venir y, como decimos nosotros, meter nuestros dos centavos ahí a ver qué se puede hacer por resolver este problema. Por eso es que hemos ido un poco más lejos que antes y hemos logrado hacer lo que hemos hecho por la cooperación que tenemos de los estudiantes, de las uniones, de las iglesias. Y hablando de las iglesias, todo el tiempo yo he pensado así, de que ahora que los rancheros andan todos enojados diciendo que las iglesias no nos debían de ayudar a nosotros, que ellos se habían de encargar de nuestra alma. Yo me acuerdo que por muchos, muchos años antes, las mismas iglesias decían: sean buenas gentes cuando trabajen, sean buenas gentes, y cuando se mueran se van a ir al cielo y tal vez nos pongan un par de alas en las costillas y vamos a andar volando. Ahora, en el tiempo moderno, ha ido cambiando un poco, de que también el cielo no está allá arriba, sino que el cielo se puede traer aquí a la tierra, y porque la iglesia nos está ayudando a traer el cielo a la tierra, los rancheros se enojan. Muchas gracias.
There are people in our organization who have been close to Cesar Chavez and have been with him for a long time. And so they seem to think alike. And so when you hear about Fred Ross or Jim Drake or some other people close to him, you think that Cesar Chavez is talking. And at this point, I would like to turn on the microphone to one who could speak for Cesar Chavez, that is Brother Jim Drake.
At this time, we're going to get down to specifics about the boycott, and I'd like to have Fred Ross give an outline of the problem as he sees it in tackling the boycott in Los Angeles. And I want him to introduce a tactic that they've been using and to discuss how it's working. Then, as soon as he's through, we're going to open it up for discussion from the floor, and we want to get ideas about Fred's tactic, the idea that's being used in LA. We also want to get ideas of what has been working in your communities. We're assuming that the people here at this meeting today are not just friends of the farm workers, but are in reality an extension of the Farm Workers Union. And we think that you should have a say, and that we know that you have ideas about strategies that have worked that we haven't heard of. So Fred's going to talk a little bit about one strategy, and then we want to get a lot of ideas on the floor and have a good discussion about what works and what doesn't work. And Fred?
Did you want to translate that?
Dice Jim que hemos hablado del boicoteo en general. Ahora se trata de hablar de las tácticas y los métodos específicos que nos pueden ayudar en el boicoteo. Y va a pasar el micrófono al compañero Fred Ross, que nos va a explicar algo de las tácticas que la experiencia nos muestra que son eficaces. Y después vamos a ver si hay una discusión de entre todos. Dice Jim, nosotros sabemos que estos, ustedes que están aquí presentes con nosotros ahora, no son solamente amigos del trabajador campesino o gente de buena corazón que vienen a vernos, a visitarnos. Sabemos que todos los que están aquí porque son como una extensión, como un brazo de la Unión. Son gente que sabemos que han sido invitados porque sabemos que están dispuestos a trabajar y a llevar a cabo el boicoteo en los distintos lugares de donde vienen. Así que aquí no es junta ya de decirles cómo va el boicoteo y todo está bien, sino todos estamos trabajando en un proyecto y vamos a hablar específicamente sobre las tácticas que tenemos que utilizar para fregarlos a los rancheros.
For the benefit of those that, probably came into the strike or the boycott a little late, I just wanted to review very, very quickly what the history of the boycott has been. Well, I came in a little late myself. I came after the first boycott had already gotten underway and was just about over, as a matter of fact. Well, that was the boycott back in 1965 against Schenley products. A number of you here undoubtedly took part in that. And it worked too, as you know. And then immediately after that, we went into the boycott of DiGiorgio products. And that worked too, as you know. We were singling out individual growers. We got away from the big boo-boo that was committed way back when they took on, you know, all the growers together. That'd be like Walter Reuther taking on the whole auto industry instead of just Ford alone and knocking him off and then taking on General Motors and so on. But with the boycott program, we were able to concentrate just on one grower at a time. For a while, as I say, we took on Schenley, and we took on DiGiorgio, and then next, of course, came Pirelli Minetti. We were pretty successful there, too. Not just because of the boycott, but because of the boycott, plus other very important things that we don't have to go into here, many of you know about. Well, then we came to a point where we took on the largest, the biggest fish of them all in Jamara. And we thought that we were doing pretty well, especially when we began to look around the markets at one point. And we didn't see too many Jamara labels on the grape boxes. We thought, gee, we must be doing a great job. I guess we're shutting off those grapes up there. Well, then we found out that wasn't true at all. Jamara had trapped us. He was using the labels of about 85 other growers in order to make us and the housewives, the customers, believe that we were buying the grapes of other growers, not of Jamara. Well, when we found that out, we had to take stock of everything that we had done in the past, all the ideas that we had had in the past. And eventually we figured out, the beginning of last year, that the only way that we could get out of this trap that Jamar had put us in, and that some other grower could easily put us in too, was to go after all table grapes. No way we can say all table grapes, because practically all of them are right here in California anyway. So that was the strategy that was agreed upon early last year. We'd forget about Jamara and Kovacevic and Saninovic and all the rest of them, and just go after all of them. And so it was about that time that Caesar sent out a letter to all of the table grape growers in California, inviting them to come to a meeting and sit down and talk the thing over. And as you know, not one of them even deigned to answer the letter. So immediately after that, then, we were perfectly free to go after all table grapes. We didn't have to worry about the labels anymore at all. They were all no good. They stunk. And a little later, in the past, we had to worry about the NLRB getting injunctions against us when we got a little over exuberant at some of the chain stores and so on, like we did in connection with Mayfair, getting an injunction which just stopped us cold. They gave us a breathing period of 90 days when we couldn't picket at all, and we couldn't carry on a boycott program. Well, we had to figure a way around that, and the union did figure a way around that by getting our 15 or 17 peanut shed workers out of the our union and into a union of their own, an international union of peanut shellers that take care of 16 or 17 peanut workers down in the Arvin area. So that meant then that we only had strictly farm workers in the union. And that meant too that from that point on we didn't fall under the NLRB provisions, either the punitive provisions or the so-called beneficial provisions. We were just outside. We were just a group of people. We weren't considered by NLRB as even a union anymore. We were just a group of people. So they couldn't get at us and slap a boycott on us as soon as we began to get effective in boycotting the chain stores. So this year then, we began actually boycotting the stores right out in the open. We didn't just tell people, don't buy grapes. We told them, don't buy anything in that store because that store carries grapes. As far as I know, this is the only union that is able to do that. And it comes in real handy being able to operate on that basis. Because you can turn away just literally thousands and eventually hundreds of thousands of people who believe in our cause away from shopping at particular stores. We did this all over the United States. And we drove people away from the stores that we were concentrating on. We tried to find other stores, usually small chains and large independent stores, that would remove the grapes. So that when we, well, sent them away, the customers away from Safeway or Thrifty Mart or Lucky's or Boys or name it, Vons and so on, they would have another store to go to, you see. The main difficulty about all this was we were not able to find enough stores of the small chain variety or the big independent variety that would remove the grapes so that we would have a place to send them. And so, as a result of that, people in many parts of the cities throughout the country would say, well, you know, you're boycotting all the stores. I don't have any place to trade anymore. I'm not going to go down to that mom and pop store down there and trade. Their prices are too high. Well, this was one of the big problems that we came up against in trying to pursue this scattershot approach in picketing and boycotting, well, all of the big chains throughout the country. Another big problem we came up against was the fact that nowadays, very damn few people actually want to get out on a picket line. Well, they get out once in a while. You know, but I'm talking about getting out in large numbers on a continuing basis so that you could put a line all around all the chain stores. If we could ever do that, well, you know, we'd have it made. Well, we can forget about that because we can't even get enough people, you know, together with our own to put a line around all the stores in even one big chain. Not yet we can. Well, then we tried another approach. Beginning about last December, we said, well, we can't get them out. We can't get people out on the line. Maybe if we begin to make contact with as many organizations as we can get each organization to send a little delegation out to call on all of the chain store managers within their neighborhood. Well, so we did that. Again, we got the help of quite a few delegations, but not anywhere near enough. In other words, in order to make that effective, one delegation would have to keep going, another one the next day, 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 to all the stores and all the neighborhoods and so on. Well, haven't got the troops. Many people, for instance, give you an example in Los Angeles, the only people that we have ever been able to get out on a picket line from the outside on a continuing basis in pretty fair numbers have been people from the intensely religious community. Intensely religious community. I'm not just talking, you know, well, I'm a good Catholic or I'm a good Protestant. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being intensely religious in the kind of religion that we believe in the cause, who tie it in with the way they believe things should be in life and the hereafter and all the rest. Those are the main people, almost the only people that we've ever been able to get out on a line on a continuous basis. Wherever we go, this is a sad thing to have to say, but it's very, very understandable to me. We have in Los Angeles the largest Mexican-American population, well, almost in the whole Southwest. I guess there must be, around about 500,000 Chicanos in Los Angeles. Do you think we can get the Chicanos out on the picket line in Los Angeles on a continuing basis? Or even just once in a while? Or even 1 hour a week? No, can't do it. Well, other people say, you know, what's the matter with them? So I come right back at those other people and say, what's the matter with you? The same thing is the matter with them, that's the matter with you. When everybody else in the community starts coming out on their lines, well, the Chicanos will come out too. But nobody else is coming out except this little small group of religious people. So we racked our brains. Getting close to the end of the grape season now, well, grape season's over, but I mean getting close to the point where there aren't going to be any more grapes in the chain stores. Probably by, well, another couple of weeks you won't see any. There are very, very few. The ones you see now are just for, you know, not even for the birds. But we decided, well, we remembered something that Gandhi did in connection with his whole program of nonviolence, you know. One of the things that, that some people at least say that Gandhi was figuring on was this. The Indian people, well, they're by nature kind of apathetic. And they don't move too fast and so forth. And so he decided, well, we got to take advantage of that. We're going to stop the trains in India that are run by the British. We're going to have the people that want to lie down anyway go and lie down on those tracks out there. And by God, they did go and lie down on the tracks, and they brought the whole transportation system of India to a stop, non-violently. So we decided, well, we can't get people out on picket lines continuously in large numbers. We can't get them to go out in delegations continuously in large numbers. But by God, I'll bet there's one thing that they will do, because they can sit down and do it. And that is to pass a petition or a pledge. Let me just read it to you. Anybody can do it. Some of them aren't going to sit down and do it. We hope the majority aren't going to sit down and do it. But it's something that those that want to sit down and do it can do it. And this is the way it reads. The Great Boycott Petition. Or actually, maybe it's going to be changed to Great Boycott Pledge. It reads like this. We, the undersigned, support the striking grape workers in their nonviolent efforts to organize and bargain with their employers. In order to win their three-year-old struggle, the farm workers have been forced to boycott all California grapes, table grapes. Various small chains and independent markets in California are giving their support to the workers by refusing to handle the grapes. Safeway, the largest of the chains, has consistently supported the growers by continuing to sell table grapes picked by strikebreakers. Therefore, we, the undersigned, will not shop at Safeway until such time as they refuse to handle California table grapes. I'll just explain very quickly why we decided on the pledge approach or the petition approach. Some people, a few we hope, won't do any more than sign this. a larger number will take 100 of these petitions and start working on them, either through his own organization, out on a table at a college college campus, out in front of a large housing development, right out on the street, maybe right out in front of Safeway stores, getting them to sign this. But we believe that perhaps as many as about, if we get to them, at least 100,000 people in Los Angeles, at the very least 100,000 people, will take two or three of these petitions and fill them up. You see, for the ones like the ones that lay down on the tracks over there and stop the trains, for those that want to just sit in their homes and watch TV, you know, and have a cerveza and so forth, well, the neighbors come over, you know, they want to sit around and talk to. All we have to do is have our petition there. Don't have to move out of the house and get them to sign that petition, you know? But for the others that are really going to be active, there are just a large number of ways that they can help. Before I get into those ways, though, I want to just mention why it is that we picked Safeway of all the big chains. Well, Safeway is by far the largest chain, at least in the state of California. I think it's about third largest in the United States. It's my understanding that there are about 2,500 stores in the Safeway chain. This year alone, they're building 23 new Safeway chain stores in the city of Los Angeles. They're probably doing this in many other cities in California, building new stores, and many other cities throughout the country. Safeway being the largest, the most powerful chain that gets its products right out of the ground that it owns and puts them on its stalls in the stores, has tremendous influence over other chains. Not only that, but Safeway buys other products from other chains. Probably more than any other chain, than any other factor, the fact that the big chain stores in California, especially in Southern California, are not removing the grapes is because Safeway has told them, if you remove those grapes, you're going to be sorry. And Safeway can implement that statement and make them suffer if they break the line. They've already made an agreement not to break the line, not to take the grapes off of the big chain stores. Not only that, but because it is such a tremendous chain with so much influence over all the other chains, Safeway can speak with a tremendous amount of authority to the growers right here in Delano, if it wants to. Just by saying, look, we are not going to go through again in 1969 what we went through in 1968. So damn it, you get together with those farm workers up there, or we're not going to buy any of your grapes next year, and neither are any of the other chains. Well, to get Safeway into that frame of mind is going to be our number one job for the next 4 or 5 months, at least until after the grapes come in. We may just continue right on through the year, depending upon how it works out. But in order to do this, our boycott crews have got to change their entire approach. They've got, among other things, to get some help. Some extra help, more help than they have got right now, because there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into mounting this kind of a campaign. Oh, some people aren't going to like it. Probably some of you right now are saying, oh, well, what the hell? That's for the, you know, what's a petition drive? There's no confrontation, you know, there's no excitement. Well, up to a point, this is true. But that's the way all good organizations were built in the beginning. That's the way Cesar Chavez built this organization in the beginning. You think when he came out here during the first 3 years, he was going around starting up strikes all the time, having big confrontations with the growers? Hell no, he was out there working day after day, contacting thousands and thousands of farm workers all over the state, until the time came when he was actually forced into a strike. But he worked for 3 years planning and consolidating. That's what we've got to do between now and the time the grapes come in. It's a marvelous opportunity. The reason I know that it'll work is because we did this last year at the same, during the same period of the year that we're in right now, back in New York. Naturally, we had a lot of help. We loaded up the caballo with 40 farm workers and took them all back to New York. Then we divided up that tremendously large city into various segments. The Protestant segment, the Catholic segment, the Puerto Rican segment, the Jewish segment, the Negro segment, the youth segment, the union segment. And then we had access to quite a few telephones. Farm workers stayed on those phones all day long, calling up organizations in all of those various communities that I mentioned, urging them to let the farm workers come and talk to the rank and file members of all of those organizations. And they did, so that every night and every afternoon after they'd been making their telephone calls, they were going out to address meetings of rank and file people in all those communities that I mentioned. We were averaging in New York City 25 meetings a day addressed by farm workers, at least two-thirds of whom had never made a speech in their lives. We had a little education program going there. Some of them memorized their speeches. Some of them just made little notes and all that, and then they did a marvelous job. The thing that they were getting out of all the members of all those organizations in all parts of New York were letters and postcards signed and written by the rank and file members of the union, because we just stopped the union meeting and pass out postcards and tell them more or less what to write. I won't buy another table grape until you sit down and work with the union. Just one sentence. We got thousands, eventually tens of thousands of postcards like that. And we got letters from all of the international unions, all of the local unions in New York City, all of the other religious, youth, ethnic, community organizations throughout New York City. And all of those letters were sent not only to Jamara, that we were originally on strike against, but to all of the other growers, because we had them duplicated, Xerox. So that every day those growers around here were getting letters from very, very large organizations saying, my organization with a membership of 10,000 people will never buy another table grape until you settle with the farm workers. Mine with a membership of 50,000, and they were all on the letterheads of these big organizations. Well, that big campaign, which started in New York, was then spread out to all the other cities throughout the United States. We sent farm workers from New York down to Chicago and Boston, and eventually the same program was going into effect all over the United States. This was before the grapes came in, you see. But it shook the growers up enough so that for the first time, the grape growers began to get together with all the other growers in California, and they set up a war chest fund of over $1 million to fight us, because they knew that the jig was just about up unless they started a tremendous counterattack. Well, the only problem with getting letters written, or even postcards, is that that takes a lot of money. You know how much a postcard costs. Not only that, it takes a little bit too much time at meetings to get people to, you know, write even a long sentence. It doesn't take any time at all to get them to write their name and address. Not only that, but the advantage that a petition drive has over this other kind of drive is that you can involve 1,000% more people people today who just say, well, I don't eat any table grapes. I won't buy any table grapes. Well, you might go to their house and find out that unfortunately the wife has already gone out and bought table grapes even though the husband didn't want her to, or vice versa. Well, once we get people who invest a little bit of themselves by the thousands into doing some work on this, when they go into a house, they're invited over to have a few beers at somebody's house and they see grapes on the table, there's going to be a fight in that house. All over California, people are going to be fighting. Well, these are the basic reasons that we did decide on going into this big plan, or this big project. This, of course, is only the first step. When during the discussion period, some of you are going to come up with ideas about what we ought to do next. We also have some ideas about what we ought to do next in order to keep escalating the program against Safeway. We are not going to decide here today what we're going to do because, you know, there's a spies, you know, there's spies around and we don't want Safeway to find out what we're going to do next. We just want to keep them off balance, you know? Just keep them wobbly. Well, what we have done in Los Angeles, along the same line that we've done in, that we did in New York, is to assign 4 farm workers or volunteers, they're all here with you today, to work almost all day long on telephones with the help of one of the organizations that some of you belong to by the name of MAPA. We are now using 4 other telephones in addition to the telephones that we have in the farm workers' office down there, and we're keeping those telephones hot all day long, calling up organizations all day long. With the help that we got, for instance, from the CDC, the California Democratic Council, Mary Salem, who turned over about 150 names of Democratic Club presidents to us, we were able to go through that list eventually and talk to every single one of those and gradually weed out the ones that aren't, they just won't even work on a petition. Till we got about 75 out of about 150 chapters. Well, of course, some of the chapters don't exist anymore. And the farm workers every night are going out and addressing the rank and file members of those chapters and selling them on the idea of coming into the program and taking our petitions and going out and getting all their people to distribute those petitions. We keep track of that's just one group. Then we've got a large number of church organizations that we have been in contact with, they go out and talk to, and they take the petitions. A large number of youth organizations. We're working out now out in the large Negro community out in the Watts area, and they are beginning to take the petitions. The youth organizations, some of them, are beginning to take the petitions. Just before we left, we got the go-ahead from the head of the AFL-CIO, Sig Erowitz, to go into 600 labor union locals, to get those locals to invite us to their meetings so that we can go there with our petitions and make a pitch and pass out the petitions and get those the rank and file to start taking them around to wherever they go to get them to sign, get them signed up. And then all kinds of civil rights organizations, housing organizations, lawyers organizations, and so on. Right now we're working with about, well, nearly 200 different organizations. 4 organizers are working with those 200 organizations. But when we start working with 600 labor union locals, we're really going to be swamped. Fortunately, we have gone through and set up appointments and made the talks and passed out the petitions. We've passed out about 7,000 petitions down there already in the last 2.5 weeks. So that when we do get the go-ahead from a large number of the labor union locals, we'll be able to spare all of these people to call them every day, make the appointments, and go out at night and talk to them. This is going to take work, because every time we give out a petition or a group of petitions, we make a card on them. In other words, this is where the real guts of the program. We can give out a million petitions, and if we don't follow up on it, we think we've got a marvelous program mounted, and we haven't got anything. So we have to follow up. After we've given the petitions, we let about 10 days go by, and then we call, start calling everybody we gave those petitions to make them send the petitions in just as soon as possible, so that we will have those petitions, big stacks of them, maybe big rooms full of them eventually, to do what we want to do next against Safeway. That's going to take more help than we've got in our offices right now in California. Well, that's more or less all I have to say, and I think Jim wanted, well, after the translation, why Jim wanted to open it up for questions.